This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Chapel Hill novelist Carla Buckley grew up in a family of secrets. But when it was time to start her own family, she decided she would always be upfront and honest with her own children. Carla now has three kids around college age, and she knows they still harbor secrets of their own. But how much do parents really want to know about the secret lives of their children? That was a driving question behind her latest novel, The Good Goodbye. Carla weaves three points of view together to understand a mysterious dormitory fire that sent two cousins to the ICU and uncovered hidden secrets and wounds between the girls and their families. Carla's going to be at McIntyre Books in Pittsburgh on March 5th. But first, Carla Buckley is here with me on The State of Things. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Nice to be here, Frank. Thank you for having me.
This book centers on a single event, a dorm fire that sent two girls to the hospital. It kills one boy. Tell us more about the story itself.
Well, the story is about, as you say, a dorm fire that sends two girls to the ICU. And it begins when the parents are huddled by their daughters' bedsides. And as the police are investigating the source of the fire, the parents slowly begin to realize that the girls have been leading secret lives.
It is told in the form of three voices. Tell us about the voices and the way the book is arranged.
Well, I originally had the idea for the novel way before I thought of the characters and the fire by thinking about the structure. I was in the middle of writing my previous novel, and I suddenly had the thought, well, what if I were to tell a story centered around one central event and give one narrator the opportunity to start her story in the past and work her way all the way up to the event, and another narrator were to tell her story from that event going forward. And then the third narrator, and in this case it's the mother of one of the girls, bounces between the two perspectives and fills in the empty spaces that are beginning to open up in the other two narratives.
The girls, Arden and Rory, are the two girls in the fire. They're cousins, but they're really very much like sisters in the way they relate to each other. How would you characterize their relationship?
Well, I think that girls have complicated relationships. I based Arden and Rory on my own experience growing up in Washington, D.C. and attending an all-girls school. And I think that parents would have been surprised to know what was going on at that school. And nothing nefarious, just girls have a way of confiding in one another and turning against one another that lends itself to lots of future exploration for novelists such as myself.
Well, also, I mean, I think in telling it this way from not only three different voices, but very different perspectives from the past working forward and so forth, from the present working forward, past working, and the future working back, what it does is put us as readers kind of in the same position as family members who are slowly uncovering secrets once we kind of piece these stories
exactly
together, right?
Exactly. I really love to write in a way that I think reflects my life, my real experience. We only see what people allow us to see. And we can think back into our own experiences and try to make sense of what's developing before us. We can see things in a new light. That is really what I like to do as a novelist.
And we do that every day. That's actually how we live our lives, and we selectively remember and selectively forget
exactly
those things that will inform us in ways we don't want to know. All of that is how we live, but once you become an author, right, the creator of life in this novel, how complicated is it and how difficult is it to kind of keep those stories together and running smoothly in different directions?
Well, as complicated as the structure may seem, it was actually very easy for me to take on. Every day I would sit down and write a chapter from either Rory or Arden's or Natalie's perspective, and I would keep a running journal alongside my laptop. As thoughts occurred to me, as each character spoke and thoughts occurred to me, I would jot down questions and notes that I could then follow up in the next chapter or maybe chapters down the road.
So therefore, how well formed were these characters in your mind at the start? And then maybe that would also be an invitation for you to tell us more about each of them.
Absolutely. I knew from the start that I wanted two girls who grew up almost like sisters, but not really. I loved the idea of things being not as they seemed, not as they appeared. And so that is a theme that I really hit heavy in this novel. Their parents are good friends. They have their own histories that are intertwined and dark and disturbing. And these secrets are passed on to their daughters in turn. And so I knew that. I knew enough about that when I started. But I really didn't get to know the girl's story until I allowed them to speak.
Tell us about Natalie.
Well, Natalie is an executive chef. And I researched one restaurant in Chapel Hill. The executive chef there, Kimberly, allowed me into her restaurant and showed me around and talked to me about what it's like to be a woman in essentially a man's field. Mm-hmm. And she has Arden is her firstborn, and then she has twin sons who are 6 years old. And she's a woman who is desperately juggling career and family. And she's very happily married. It was important to me that she be happy, that it wasn't her marriage that's under the microscope in this story. It's really her relationship with her daughter, which she thought was a good one.
And relationship really is, and I think the relationship of the two cousins is central, and that relationship is the most powerful, I think, driver in the novel itself. But there are other relationships, including a love triangle.
Yes. And that, I think, at least in my experience, men will drive women apart.
Well, you know, there's another perspective on that, but go ahead.
Yeah. tell me about that, Frank.
Later.
And so this is actually the boy that both girls meet while away at college begins to fray the relationship that these girls had developed growing up. They relied on each other in very different ways, in a sycophantic way, actually, the parents knew nothing about. And it was meeting this boy, Hunter, at college that turns their relationship on its head and actually takes the power away from one girl and gives it to the other.
Well, I prefer to look at this as a kind of a CAT scan on their emerging central nervous systems.
I see.
Things have changed in them, and they don't realize it until this new figure comes along.
Yes, yes.
And shows them that they have other needs and wants.
Exactly. Well, I think that's true, isn't it? That's true in real life.
Would you read for us from the novel?
Yes, I would be happy to. I'm going to read first from Arden's perspective. Arden is the character who bounces between the present day story and the past.
Okay.
The bonfire leaps in the round fire pit. It's so pretty in the dark woods. It makes the tall trees look friendly. I hold my palms to the heat until my mom tells me to take a step back. I share a cabin with 5 other brownies. The plastic mattress squeaks when I kneel on it to spread out my sleeping bag. I don't care about the bugs and bears. They feel very far away. Later, we make s'mores when it gets too dark to see anything but our hobgoblin faces in the firelight. In the morning, we squish eggs in sealed plastic sandwich bags and drop them, one by one, into boiling water in the pot balanced on the metal grate. The whole time, Rory hides in the cabin. I bring her eggs, lifting the tail of the sleeping bag and passing her the soggy paper plate. Fire makes me brave. It's the strong black line that separates me from Rory. Am I awake? My throat hurts, but it's my head that's killing me. Dimly, I hear someone say, pulse 112. Blood pressure? Brisk hands on me, pulling the sheet taut, adjusting the thing in my mouth. It snakes down my throat. I try to spit it out, but my tongue won't move. My eyes are sealed shut. Tingling starts in my fingertips and down in my toes. Angry bees buzzing in my veins, swarming up my wrists and calves, headed for my soft, helpless heart. They are determined. They climb over one another in their eagerness. I can't get away. 124 over 90. Maybe she's dehydrated. It's probably pain. Let's increase the drip, see how she does on it. The bees slow down, fall asleep in gentle heaps.
Carla Buckley reading from the perspective of Rory in her latest novel, The Good Goodbye. And you can hear more from Carla at McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh March 5th and the Eva Perry Regional Library in Apex on March 6th. And, of course, we've got all that information at our website, stateofthings.org. These girls have complex relationships with their parents as well in terms of their expectations for the girls. Mm. Tell us more about how that plays a role in this.
Well, I was raised... going to college was a very important thing for me. I was raised knowing that I would always go to college, and I was sent to very competitive school to prepare to get into college. And so I think that, and as raising my own children, I have passed this value on to them, and I think that they might say as well that I pressured them as much as I didn't want to, but I was aware of their grades and their choices. And so I wanted to put these two girls in that pressure cooker environment. You know, parents do the best they can, I believe, for their kids. And in this particular story, these parents really want their children to do everything, to be everything they weren't, to have every opportunity they didn't have.
Well, the theme of secrets, expectations, playing to expectations, and certainly how those change in your view of yourself as you grow older, a very important part of this, but also doubles play an important part in your novel.
Yes, and I named the restaurant, the fictional restaurant in my novel, Double. And there's a central reveal in the novel that plays on that as well and carries the second half of the novel to its conclusion.
You came to this by an interesting route in the sense of how you structured this. Tell us about this revelation that you had, just in terms of the craft of writing and what led you to use this form.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I wrote 8 novels by sitting down and starting at point A and working my way to point Z. And I had a great, great time doing it. But none of those novels got published. I did get a literary agent. We did beat the bushes. I got my share of rejection letters. And it wasn't until I stepped back and I said to myself, what am I doing wrong? That I got the answer. And the answer is, well, maybe I need to take a page from the experts, the screenwriters, who craft their stories in a compelling way to keep a viewer riveted to the screen. And I taught myself a few basic concepts, and I sat down and I structured my next novel. I had an idea from that novel, and I structured it. And so before I wrote the first word, I knew how I was going to begin it. I knew the big turning point in the middle. I knew how I was going to end it. And I think that what that did for me as a writer is it allowed me to really play on suspense, to know when I needed to reveal something important and to keep that line taut and not let it sag. And that story ended up being my first novel, The Things That Keep Us Here. So I'm a big, big fan of structure.
Structure itself, and then something you learn from screenwriters. I wonder to what extent that suggests that we as readers are informed by the form itself of film. In other words,
yes.
would a 19th century reader, writer be able to write that way or please a 19th century audience?
Exactly. My competition isn't so much other novelists or the work of other novelists. It's streaming video. It's Making a Murderer. Readers, and myself included, we want things to move along. We don't want to be dragged down. We're impatient. We have a lot of things pulling at us. It's a busy world. And if we're going to sit down and read a book, well, we want those pages to turn fast. And that's not a... I sometimes look back on those wonderful novels of the 1900s and early, you know, late 1800s and think, oh...
Middlemarch was very important.
Yes,
kinda
yes.
Kind of hard to get through, don't you think?
Yes,
I'm
exactly.
Very important.
I wonder
novel.
How that would novel might do today. But
I don't know. Well, you can imagine that public television will turn it into a series pretty soon.
Yes.
if they haven't already.
Yes.
But to the point of how this works and keeping the suspense, and I think one of the wonderful things about this is that the three, not necessarily just the three voices, but these very different points of view coming together allows me a sense of completion at the end of each chapter, so I can keep moving. But also, once I am switched to another perspective, a sense of mystery and suspense. Oh, my goodness, if I knew more about that, maybe this wouldn't be as simple as I thought it was three sentences ago.
Right, right. And I think it's the author's job to make sure that when the reader turns the page and discovers that the reader's moved on to another character, that that reader's not disappointed or crushed. And so that was something I really worked hard at, to keep all three of my characters interesting, motivated, and with their own share of secrets. And the other thing is, I think you have to be careful when you work in multiple perspectives, is to not be coy about your revelations. Readers know when you're holding something out and they get tired of being manipulated. Readers are much smarter than maybe I initially gave them credit for.
It's because they read.
Yeah, and listen to NPR radio.
Blessings. My guest today, Chapel Hill author Carla Buckley, her latest novel, The Good Goodbye. Carla, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
You can hear more from Carla at McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh on March 5th and the Eva Perry Regional Library in Apex March 6th for a panel discussion with local authors. And if you missed that or want to know more about anything we've talked about, please go to our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, Charlie Shelton, and Andrew Tai. Robin Copley is the technical director, Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.